the Matt Bubala Show, everybody. 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up even later with us. It's 3:07 in the morning here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the Tribune Tower. Sean Worthington's about to jump on the phone with us. In his book, Beyond Bitcoin, he writes, "In the future, there will be no banks except the banks on your cell phones and computers. There will be no tellers, vaults, loan officers, or buildings to house them, nor will there be any accountants. Software will take care of all the accounting and banking for you. Tax systems will all but disappear. No one will pay taxes. Only taxes on land and homes will be possible. People will be able to trade by whisper and store their money in their minds where it cannot be seized or detected. Governments will decline. Governments will have to limit their income to fees, bonds, and donations. Politicians who once got elected by delivering largesse to the public will be out of business. You will receive your income by email, text message, and website download. It will go directly into the bank on your desktop. This bank will pay your bills automatically on the dates you specify by sending emails to those you wish to pay." Okay, well, that sounds like a frightening future. Sean Worthington is on the phone with us. Sean, before we get into all of that, because now I'm like, oh my God, it's like the Hunger Games out here all of a sudden. First, you got to explain to me how we're getting there in the first place. And I'm sorry that we are completely unknowledgeable here. We just want to ask first, what the hell is Bitcoin and what is cryptocurrency? Can you explain it to those of us who are just looking at this like our parents did VCRs 20 years ago?
Absolutely. You know, Bitcoin is the first digital currency to solve what's called the physical integrity problem of digital money. And the problem is how can you ever have a digital money if you can just copy and paste it a million times and counterfeit it, or somebody can come in and shut off the server and just shut it all down or hack it or something. And Bitcoin was able to do that by creating a new data structure called the blockchain. The blockchain is a database. It's a database that you can write transactions to. You can read transactions from it, but you cannot delete transactions or update or change the transactions that have happened in the past. And so this gives us a way to track money as it goes from person to person, and we can stop counterfeits and figure out who owns the money. And, you know, the purpose of money is to basically track how much value we add to the economy so that we can get some of that same value out. And Bitcoin was really the first one to do that.
Now, when Bitcoin was first starting to gain some popularity in the popular press, I guess, we would read about how it's it can't be faked. It can't be counterfeited. You can track everything. And so, you wouldn't lose your money. It's always going to be there. You're going to be able to find it. But I want to say in the last year, there have been a couple stories about people who had accounts, then that everything was wiped out. How is this not very, very susceptible to hacking?
Well, as a matter of fact, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are susceptible because they've got this one private key. And if somebody can get that private key, then they have access to all your money. And so it's not like regular money where you can put some in one bank and one under your pillow and some of it, you know, buried underground. It's all in this one account. And you've got to guard that private key. And if somebody can get it, they just have everything. So you're right. It is a big problem with the cryptocurrencies.
So, that wasn't very reassuring then, because I understand you have this key, but to get to your Bitcoin, you're going to have to access it through your phone or your laptop or something. So you're going to be using that key. And if you get hacked, somebody can get that. Should we be nervous about the idea of cryptocurrency getting hacked?
Well, yes, you should. But in the future, we've got this thing called Cloudcoin, my invention, and instead of having it so that every person has accounts and they all have to log in and use user private keys, what we have is we have it so that all of the money itself has its own accounts. And so all you have to do is give the money from one person to another person, and then you check to see if the money is authentic or not. And so it's a completely different game changer, and it is possible to separate the money into different places and to stop that systematic risk that we have with cryptocurrencies. So I think that, and we also embed PIN numbers and other biometric information. So it's possible that within the next year or two, we could have a digital currency that is unstealable.
Well, and that seems like the natural place for that to go, right? For whether it's retinal scans or fingerprints or things like that. So there has to be something that can't be accessed remotely. But I imagine even then, there people are going to find ways to hack into these things. Explain to me mining Bitcoin and mining cryptocurrency. How do people earn cryptocurrency at first? I mean, I know right now I could sell something on eBay and on PayPal or whatever. I could be paid in cryptocurrency. But when they say mining Bitcoin and things like that, what does that mean?
Well, when they created cryptocurrencies, they figured that money should be like gold and that it should be mined out of the ground. And so they wanted to create an artificial gold mine in which you had to dig around to find that. And so this allowed people to create servers, and these servers would handle the transactions, add to the blockchain. But then after they were done with that, they would be able to guess numbers, which is kind of like searching around. And as they guessed numbers, it would become harder and harder because these numbers would be bigger and bigger. So they started with small numbers, now they're up to the trillions, and it requires lots of guessing. And so if you're able to handle, if you're one of these system administrators who runs the blockchain and you handle all of these transactions, you get to guess, and there's a chance you'll win, and then you'll get some Bitcoins and you'll actually be paid for what you're doing, and it'll be worth your while.
But who is creating that value? I mean, who are those Bitcoins just added that, you know, out of thin air? Who owned those Bitcoins that are now valuable that you could find if you do this work?
So the idea is that they've got this Bitcoin network, and there's thousands of servers, and they all need to encrypt and decrypt, and the encryption requires a lot of electricity, requires a lot of hardware, then it gets hot, and you have to cool it down, so that's more electricity. And so in order to pay for that, they're going to reward the system administrators, which they call miners, for doing that by giving them Bitcoins. So really, it's a tool to pay for the infrastructure and create new money and reward those people that are running the servers that do the transactions.
Okay, so that makes sense. So they're doing some work for the Bitcoin. Why did Bitcoin become so insanely valuable this year and then go back down? Is that the type of thing that's going to happen with digital currencies or cryptocurrencies, is that they're going to have very high highs and low lows? Are they going to be roller coaster-like?
So this was caused by the Federal Reserve, not actually Bitcoin. So what happens is that the Federal Reserve is able to produce money anytime that somebody wants to borrow it. And so back in 2008 or 2006, I should say, we had the big housing bust, and it was a similar situation. The banks want to loan to people who they think is a safe investment, so they loan to the homeowners, and that causes the price to go up. But here recently, people started realizing, hey, there's a lot of money to be made in Bitcoin, and they started borrowing on their credit cards, and they started mortgaging their houses, putting second mortgages on it, and taking all the family savings and putting it into Bitcoin. And that's caused there to be a big, giant spike. And, of course, it was a bubble, and it popped, and it's still popping.
But it's also coming back a little bit right now, right? I mean, do you think that Bitcoin was a bubble? And because I know that you've invented a cryptocurrency as well, there are several of them out there that we've started hearing about. Bitcoin still has the Googleness of being the most well-known, I guess, but I know there's several out there. Is it a cryptocurrency bubble, or is it just a Bitcoin bubble?
So it is a cryptocurrency bubble in general, but some of the currencies are hit more than others. Bitcoin is the one that had the most amount of hype, and so it did decline the most. And it is a real bubble, and it's following this classical bubble trajectory. And it is going down, and I think that it's going to keep going down, and we'll see it actually go below what it's actually worth, and that's going to have some big consequences. But there's about 1,500 other digital currencies that are called altcoins, or they're cryptocurrencies, and they just take the same Bitcoin code, because it's open source, you just copy and paste it, rename it, market it, and now you've got another currency, and you sell them. But we're seeing all of them being affected and all of them going down in value.
My newsman, Roger Badish, has a question for you, Sean.
Sure.
Now, we've been watching the value of these go up and then down and up and down, and we haven't seen any, like, disastrous reports in the news about people have lost their entire life savings, their homes, everything like that. But my question is, with all of these over 1,000 different kinds of cryptocurrencies, what are the regulations? We have the banking laws in place, even though they're starting to get rid of some of them. We have lending laws in place. Who's going to regulate this? Is it the federal government? Is it the cryptocurrency agencies, the cryptocurrency banks? What,
or the International Monetary Fund, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, who's got the control over all this stuff?
Yes. Well, first of all, you have to assume that somebody can control it. And we see that a lot of agencies in California, I mean, we had something called eGold here about 20 years ago, and they, all these people took their gold and they put it in a vault, and they issued digital certificates against it. They traded billions of dollars worth. And then one day the state of California just kicked in the door and took all the gold and said they were doing something illegal. And but now the state of California has made it legal to create currencies like I've done. And we see that money is essential, a part of, you know, human civilization. Without money, our civilization just collapses. So money is very important. And the federal government doesn't have anything in the Constitution that specifies anything about the banks. And in fact, a lot of Americans feel that the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government have teamed up. They've created a monopolistic situation in which it's kind of like the church and state back in the old days, only it's the government and the banks, and they allow the banks to basically create money, and it allows the government to borrow as much money as they want. And that's kind of like a hack, because monetary systems are, in fact, information systems. Money is data. And if you can get some of that money, it's kind of like you're hacking. And there really is no laws that I can see that specify what the federal government can do about that.
You talk about, you mentioned in the book early on that taxes, everything is going to change once cryptocurrency really becomes what's being used all the time. Why would the government not be able to, especially since all this is traceable and trackable, why wouldn't governments be able to charge us per transaction or, you know, institute some sort of tax on that?
And so that's exactly what we're seeing in China and in Venezuela, which are terrible countries. Venezuela has just created this petro currency, and they give out accounts on this thing just like you get a social security number, and they can track everything that you buy and everything that you sell. They know how much money you have. They can redistribute wealth. They can basically control you like a farm animal. And in China, it's even worse. It is just, you know, it's terrible. And that's, you know, what the blockchain does. That's, the blockchain tracks all transactions, and it's all public. It's a public ledger. So that is what I call blockchain socialism. This is not the future that you want, but something like Cloudcoin, which you don't have to have an account, and you can store it in your mind and share it by whispering. That is just the exact opposite. And then we see that the government has an inability to even know that you have the money.
But the government's not going to allow that, are they, Sean? I mean, if the system for taxing, transactions or purchases or things like that went away, the government would collapse, especially when we're, you know, borrowing $84 trillion as it is this year, right? So you got to imagine they're going to step ahead of that and make sure that however this stuff gets traded, there's going to be a way for taxation, aren't they?
Well, you know, in theory, they work for us. And in South Korea, we just saw, you know, some of this dynamic happen where the South Korean government announced that they were going to get rid of cryptocurrency. They were going to make it illegal. They were going to tax the hell out of everything. And then the people got angry at them, and they may change their mind really quick. And so nobody wants to see the banks have a monopoly over the power like they do now. And I don't think anybody wants to see the government have that kind of ability either.
Well, Sean, I'm going to correct you on one thing. You said nobody wants to see the banks have that kind of power, and that's not true.
The banks do.
The banks want to see the banks have that kind of power, and the banks are going to buy that power by donating as much money as they need to our elected officials. I mean, Sean, people are getting killed by AR-15s. There's this whole uprising for it. 435 people ain't changing the laws. There's a reason for that, because money talks, and the banks have more money than anybody. So I can't imagine the banks are going to let themselves get sidelined before this is over. I mean, do you really see that happening?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a fight. There's definitely going to be a fight, and we'll see what kind of weapons come out, and whether they're real weapons or if they're logical weapons or if they're. But in Western civilization, we got this thing called the argument, and we make arguments, and it's logical, and you know, hopefully, logic and reason will win out.
Sean Worthington is the author of Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency. You can find it online right now. It's fascinating. I still don't quite grasp it, Sean, but I'll be interested to see how Cloudcoin takes off and everything you've got going. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great evening. Sean Worthington, again, Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currency.